Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services. It's February 20th, 2014. And we're going a little out of order. We're going to do House Bill 4028 first, then 4074, 4050, and 4013. So it's just reverse order. So I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4028A. And Jack Roberts and Representative Tomei, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Carolyn Tomei. I represent House District 41. Thank you so much for hearing this bill today. This bill, 4028A, deals with gambling. The bill, together with an amendment I wish to propose, came out of a bipartisan work group consisting of a wide variety of stakeholders. I just talked with Representative McKinnemer's staff in the hall, and we figured we've been doing this for 5 years, ever since he first came into the legislature. So this group consisted of Representative Kinnemer, Representative Julie Parrish, Representative Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, and myself. And this is a very important and timely discussion. When I got home last night, I live in Milwaukee in Clackamas County, and there was a Clackamas review on my doorstep. And in this Clackamas review, on the front page, was an article called Help Arrives for State Gambling Addicts. And as some of you know, the Oregonian has also run a series of articles about gambling addiction, as has the Portland Tribune and other newspapers and TV stations. So this story is not unique. Gambling addiction affects over 80,000 Oregonians, and up to 90% of them are addicted to state-run lottery. When you consider spouses, children, parents, employers of these individuals, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people affected by gambling addiction in Oregon. While this is truly a big problem, it's also a hidden problem. We all know friends and fellow legislators here who are recovering alcoholics or drug addicts, and they readily admit that. Thank you, Representative or Senator Cruz. I would imagine there are very few of us who know anyone who has admitted that they are a gambling addict. Gambling addiction brings shame with it. It destroys family, it exhausts savings and retirement funds. It usually only comes to light when the danger is done, when someone's lost their home, they've lost their spouse, they've lost their family, and they've lost their job because of embezzlement and identity theft. I've given you, I think all of you, some written information and data about the scope of the problem. I gave you all a packet, and I have more with me if you left them at your desks. But I want to talk with you today about some steps we can take to alleviate this problem. 4028A that you have before you, in past years, it provided information that lottery provided. And due to administrative hiccup, the previous lottery administration discontinued its promotion and advertising of treatment services, the gambling hotline, printed brochures, TV ads, and other auxiliary activities that publicize the availability of gambling treatment. Without these ads, many gamblers and their families are unaware that help is available. It is essential to reinstate these services in order to effectively help gambling addicts seek and find treatment. The bill passed overwhelmingly in the House, and Jack Roberts, the new lottery director, and Karen Wheeler for the Oregon Health Authority and several others are here to support this measure. Before you also is the -2 amendment for this bill. This amendment incorporates the provisions of House Bill 4040, which also passed the House with strong bipartisan support. Regardless of your feelings about state-run lottery, we have it, we rely on it, and unfortunately, I think it's here to stay. Just like with alcohol and the OLCC and the Drink Responsibly campaigns, we need and we can support responsible gambling. The Dash 2 amendment supports the new lottery administration's responsible gambling policy. And again, I gave it to you in your packet. Recognize the impacts that video poker and lottery has on many Oregonians. The Lottery Commission has already begun developing a comprehensive responsible gambling policy. The policy will be developed with a wide range of stakeholders. I provided a preliminary draft of that policy again in your information packet. The Dash 2 amendment also ensures that decision makers consider the best available research about the possible effects of games and policies on vulnerable users as they make decisions about new products. They're in the process now of buying new games. That's one of the reasons why this bill is important to pass right away. This proactive approach assures that decision makers will have the information they need to make balanced and informed decisions. And the Dash 2 amendment also requires that lottery officials, together with the Oregon Health Authority, report annually to the legislature about the responsible gambling activities. Colleagues, the Dash 2 amendment supports the current lottery administration's balanced approach to raising maximum revenue commensurate with the public good. They're doing a good job, and I want to make sure that as lottery directors and legislators come and go, these balanced policies will continue, and I urge your support of House Bill 4028A and include in it the Dash 2 amendment. And I'm certainly open to questions.
Thank you. Why don't we have Mr. Roberts testify?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jack Roberts. I'm the director of the Oregon Lottery. And we would have worked very hard with Representative Kinnear and Representative Tomei, and very much appreciate their efforts to help us on 4028, which would restore to us our ability to expend lottery funds on problem gambling and in referring people to treatment. This was something that last year, when there was some uncertainty on the part of the lottery director at the time, he asked for a legal opinion from the Attorney General's office, and as a proof of the old saying, be careful what you ask for, you may get it, he got the opinion, which basically said you can't do that. And so there immediately stopped a lot of things that we had been doing, and including not only the ads, some of the ads we were running, among them an award-winning ad trying to help direct people to treatment. We also at that time dropped out of the Oregon Council on Problem Gambling, which we had been a member. So when I came in, this is one of the issues that we wanted to address. We looked at that opinion and decided we could be maybe a little more aggressive. We didn't restore the full ads, but we did put back on some of our ads a referral to the hotline because it basically didn't cost us any more money. And so we felt that that was being overly cautious to remove that. We also went ahead and rejoined the Oregon Council on Problem Gambling because that's our staff work that for people who are being paid anyway, and so we didn't think that participating, working on that was prohibited. But this gives us a much clearer range to go back to doing what we did before that we think is a legitimate part of our business, which is if we're going to help the state make money from the lottery, we have responsibility to make sure that those who are adversely affected and who are susceptible to the issues of problem gambling and particularly gambling addiction get help. We already, the legislature has dedicated some of the funds from the lottery to the treatment. But if people don't know about the treatment, then it's hard to get them there. So for all those reasons, we're very, very pleased this is moving forward. We support wholeheartedly and have the support of the governor in supporting that. On 4040, our position has been neutral.
And this would be the amendment.
That's right, yes. It was 44, that now is the amendment, the Dash 2. We've been neutral on that. Basically, it requires us to do what we're already doing. And it's your policy decision as to whether you want to put that in statute. There's nothing in there that's being required that we aren't already planning to do, except the annual reports, which we would voluntarily do anyway. So from our standpoint, it doesn't burden us in the tasks that we have, and it, I think, reinforces what we're trying to accomplish.
Senator Cruz.
Who won the big ticket last night? What state? California.
It's California.
California. I've got the standard rule: when Powerball gets over $300 million, I buy a ticket, but I keep forgetting to do it. So,
there has been opposition to the Dash 2 amendments, and can you, if we put something like this in statute, do you feel that the department is more liable for lawsuits? Do you feel I'm still trying to get a hold of the concerns that the opposition has just on the Dash 2.
I'm aware of those concerns. We live in America. People can sue all the time for all sorts of reasons, and so I don't know that you can ever completely protect yourself from that. I think the concern, as I understand it, is that if you set a standard that we're going to help people not become addicted or become problem gamblers, then if people do in fact become, they have some basis for a lawsuit. I don't know how serious that is. Frankly, to the extent that's a concern, it would also be a concern if we simply voluntarily, as we've already committed to doing or in the process of doing, we set those things up. It might be possible to put some language in the bill that would make it clear that you're not intending to create some cause of action. It also would help if this bill goes forward with the amendment to have strong legislative history, that no one is expecting that this is going to eliminate altogether problem gambling or gambling addiction, and that we understand that there will still be people who suffer, and that no one should see this as a guarantee against those problems, nor should they feel that this entitles them to bring some litigation on their behalf or behalf because a family member becomes addicted or employee or all those things. I think I hope we could build a case that shows that's not. But having said that, there are no guarantees in the world. There's no guarantee today that we can't be sued over this. And so you have to make the policy decision as to how important that is.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank you, Director Roberts, and Representative Tomei for working on this. When my prior life, when I was involved in social work and helping adults who were in recovery from addiction, I saw time and time again where somebody would get clean and then they'd think that they could still dabble in other addictive behavior, and before you know it, they're hanging out at the bar again playing Keno, and then they're right back in the cycle. And so I think you're kind of bringing us through the stages of change as a legislature and helping us begin to see that, you know, making money at all costs despite the pain and suffering might not be in the best interest of what the state government should be doing. And I just I think this is a good step in that direction, and I know it just took tons and tons of work to even get this far, and I just want to thank you both for doing so.
Thank you. If I could respond to that, Madam Chair. Representative Kinnamer, he couldn't be here. He's dealing with a land use issue about Damascus. I just don't get that.
Oh, God.
He couldn't be here, but one of the things he keeps stressing in all these years we've been working on this, that gambling addiction destroys families, it destroys people, and it is not commensurate with the public good, which is in statute. So I think that we're trying to address that.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And with that, Karen Wheeler and Tim Murphy and Jeff Murata. Please proceed, Karen.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman Sanderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Wheeler, and I'm an administrator with the Oregon Health Authority at the Addictions and Mental Health Division. And part of my responsibility does include administering problem gambling prevention and treatment services. I'd like to just point out or highlight a couple points on the ads. At this time, as you know, no advertising is happening to promote the fact that we have treatment that doesn't cost the individual money when they walk into a program. Funding for effective, ongoing, and credible treatment, media outreach is really, it's absolutely essential. The elimination of the ads has caused the helpline calls to decrease and treatment enrollments to decrease. So the helpline calls have decreased by 21% since the year prior when we had the ads, and treatment enrollments has decreased by 8%. Since the ads were rolling. enrollments often spike after the ad campaign happens for both the helpline and for treatment. So we see the average call volume increase by 59% the week the ads are happening, and we also see the average treatment enrollment increase by 39% after the ads roll. So a lot of people engage in treatment in different ways, people that have addiction disorders, and people who have problem gambling disorders do not get referred by the typical referral pathways that we see people that have addictions to substances. So we don't have people being referred by judges or corrections or probation officers. People see these ads and they realize, I really need to get some help. Or their family member realizes that and pushes them in. So that's essentially how they get in. As a practical matter, the only messages that occur about gambling treatment come from the state. The other difference in terms of addiction disorders, we don't have a federal agency or a federal government program about problem gambling like there is with addictions, substance abuse, and drugs. So in Oregon, we're kind of known as having a nice program, a great program around the country because we do dedicate resources to pay for prevention and treatment and these advertisements. And so I just really implore that this continue, and you've heard a lot of support for that, and you'll hear the other folks testify to that effect as well. So thank you.
Just a quick question. The advertising that's done now, there's a fiscal, obviously. Did that come out of the department or the lottery?
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, the funding that supported the ads has always been with the lottery.
Okay.
It's
we
the
may have you come back, Jack, to talk about that. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Murata. I'm here today in support of Bill 4028. I have run a consulting company, Problem Gambling Solutions, and have worked with the lottery in various capacities since 2000. I began working with the lottery as the Problem Gambling Services Manager with the Department of Human Services. So I have, and then after my departure from Department of Human Services in 2007, that's when I began my consulting company, and I've consulted nationally and internationally on responsible gambling and problem gambling programs, maintaining a relationship with the lottery up until very recently. And what I can tell you is that through this relationship with the lottery working on responsible gambling programs, the lottery has made some very significant strides. They were known as a lottery that was on the forefront of addressing responsible gambling, and then things changed. And throughout the time that I worked with lottery, there was an ebb and flow in the amount of efforts that were placed on responsible gambling, including the advertising budgets and some of the policies around responsible gambling. And one of the important aspects of this bill that this bill brings forward is creating more of a stabilization so that we don't have that ebb and flow of effort that goes toward responsible gambling based on who happens to be the director at the time, where the political flow is, where some of the economic pressures arise. And I've seen all these things come into effect and influence how much attention responsible gambling received from the Oregon Lottery. So in that regard, I think it's very important, an important step forward, not only in bringing back some of the things that the state had, like a very good advertising campaign to promote problem gambling treatment, but also the many other aspects of operating a gaming business in respect to doing it in a socially responsible way. And a full knowledge, so if you do have any questions in general about responsible gambling, I'd be happy to address those as well.
Question. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tim Murphy. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Bridgeway Recovery Services, which is a mental health and addictions medical clinic here in Salem. We treat people in outpatient and in residential treatment for problems related to problem gambling. And One of the things that over the last several years as I've been to this committee and other committees to talk about support for problem gambling treatment, we're often on different ends of the conversation with the Oregon State Lottery. But in this particular issue, with this particular bill, 4028, and combining it with 4040, we have strong support from the director of the lottery, from Oregon Health Authority, from myself and the provider community. And also I wanted to represent those 80,000 people that Representative Tomei talked about, those Oregonians that are struggling with problem gambling behaviors. We have serious problems as in Oregon related to the amount and the access to problem gambling. The availability for people to go and gamble in Oregon is stronger than in most states in the United States. Access to lottery games.
Say that again. You said problem gambling is more prevalent.
The access to gambling in Oregon is more prevalent than anywhere else in the United States. And as a result of that, we see more people with problem gambling behaviors. When we talk to folks in treatment, whether they're in outpatient or in residential setting, when we ask them how they sought treatment, how they found treatment, it was universally through the advertising campaigns that happened both in newsprint and on television with the advertising ads. So we know that's been instrumental in people finding their way to treatment. This legislature was very wise years ago to dedicate a percentage of lottery funds to provide treatment for folks suffering from gambling. And what we now know is that they need to know about the access to treatment. They need to know that it's available in every county in the state and how to find a treatment provider. The advertising programs help with that. When those have been pulled, as Ms. Wheeler told you earlier, we've seen a noted decline in people accessing treatment. So we're strongly in support of the need for this bill and for folks to be able to seek the treatment that you've already provided funds to provide. So if I can answer any questions as well, I'd be happy to.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, not a question, a request of Karen. Conversation we had several months ago, I've kind of dropped the ball on it. Would you be kind enough to call my office, set up some time next week?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. What?
Let it be known to the public that...
Yes, all right.
Nicely done, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I'm going to invite you to the meeting, too,
okay.
So that's okay.
Is it Sharon Williams and Julie Hayes and Wes Wood? And then only one more after that, Jan Elfers, and then I'm going to call you and I'm going to ask someone else to come up, too. Please start.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Sharon Williams. I'm a member of Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery. I'm also on the board of Oregon Council on Problem Gambling. And the main reason I'm speaking today is because I'm also a recovering gambler. I had a serious problem with gambling. I gambled for a lot of years, and I actually gambled before we had a lottery, but we did not have video poker and so forth. When I reached the end of my gambling, I did it until I was stopped by my own gambling, by my own behavior, by the consequences to my behavior and so forth. I was at a place where in a fellowship I belong to, they call it, you know, it takes us to prison, insanity, or death. I was facing legal consequences. I attempted suicide, and I was certainly insane. One of the things I learned in that process was there was no treatment available at that time in this state. Not the treatment that we have now. And what I learned was that I had to go to a psych ward because that's what they make you do when you make a suicide attempt. And I'm grateful for that now, but when I went there, I didn't feel like I belonged because the doctors, the psychiatrists, the staff people, the other people that were there, the other patients that were there, they didn't identify with me. So obviously I didn't identify with them. I was actually told by the psychiatrists and the group people there that I didn't need to go to their groups about alcohol and drugs because I didn't have that problem. So, you know, I kind of went into it that way, and so I found my own way, and that's been successful for me. And during this process, I started working a lot with other gamblers. Now, I can tell you, for one thing, there's a benefit to that because I haven't gambled for a long time, quite a long time. But I'm also passionate about trying to help. Today, I'd just like to talk about the advertising piece. And I mean, really, I don't have really a lot to say different from what the others said. And the information that Representative Tomei provided on the problem gamblers in the state was, I couldn't say that better than she did. So, you know, but it's very, very important that these gamblers who are still suffering be able to find that treatment. And they won't find it if you only advertise once a year. Or if you put out, you know, it's as nice as the advertising is for responsible gambling, people that already have the problem, this is my opinion, but there is a lot of evidence to back this up. It's my opinion that people like me don't, that message means nothing, absolutely nothing. It won't reach them because, you know, first of all, they're going to deny they have a problem. And then the other thing is that, you know, they're too far gone. So, you know, I think it's very important, and I really truly support these bills and ask for your support in this as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think it takes a brave person to come and admit publicly the issues that you have confronted in your life. And that's so important and very meaningful. So thanks so much for coming. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Chairman Sanderson and members of the committee, my name is Julie Hines. I am a problem gambling prevention coordinator in Lane County. And I've been in my job for 12 years now. And similar to Dr. Murata, how he was saying, you've seen an ebb and a flow with the relationships with the lottery, with policy, with even just public perception of problem gambling. Senator Shields, I really like what you said about the stages of change. I think I might borrow that if that's okay. We've seen a little bit of a tidal shift in terms of the awareness of problem gambling, but overall, there's really still a stigma that's attached to it. And I think, you know, all the other points that the folks had mentioned earlier are spot on, so I don't want to belabor you or add too much to that. But just really to that piece about the awareness, you know, the helpline numbers are down. That's been said. But the people of the state of Oregon don't really even realize that this is a problem to the extent that we realize other addictions are a problem. We always say that in the prevention field, we say we're, you know, decades behind that of alcohol and other substances as far as looking at prevention and awareness. We really are. We've got a lot of work to do. And so support of House Bill 4028 would passing this bill would do a lot. It would help reinstate what has already been there and hopefully even enhance the relationship that we've had with the lottery. We won't be on pins and needles with the worries of, oh, what happens if, you know, if Mr. Roberts leaves his position? What happens if the commission changes? What happens if legislature changes? The institutionalization of this measure as well as the Dash 2 piece is really key in just helping us stabilize the issue of problem gambling awareness, of responsible gambling, and just of smart policies of working together and enhancing our relationships. So that's what I have to add. And by the way, the Board of County Commissioners in Oregon is in support of these measures as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Okay, Westwood and David Elsbrand and Jan Elfers. Please begin.
All right. For the record, my name is Jan Elfers. I'm the Public Policy Director for Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. We are a statewide Christian and interfaith organization, and our role, we believe, is to continue to bring a faith perspective to Salem and raise our voices for human dignity and for a healthy and whole society. EMO is historically opposed to state-sponsored gambling. We believe that the majority of our state revenues should be through taxes, and we welcome and hope that there will be talk in the future about comprehensive tax reform. We think that that's a really important conversation that needs to happen in the future. And so the sooner the better, and we're happy to help facilitate that. The problem with the lottery, from our perspective, is that it hurts the most vulnerable people in our society, and that it sends a wrong message to our communities and to our children about our shared values. We also believe that the proper role of government is to maximize our positive impact on society and to minimize the negative impacts that state government has on society. We recognize that a certain percentage of people who gamble will become addicts. And when that happens, not only is the addict harmed, but the families and friends of that addict is also adversely affected. And we have great concerns for those people. They're not statistics. They're our family members, they're our neighbors, and they're our fellow Oregonians. Since the state of Oregon has chosen to promote and continue gaining revenue from raised through gaming, it seems to follow that our government has a moral responsibility then to study the harmful impacts of gambling and to both warn gamblers of potential dangers in gambling and to provide information for help if and when that problem, the gambling, becomes a problem and it adversely affects them. Because of this, we really would like to urge you to support House Bill 4028. We feel it's a step in the right direction. And again, we'd like to encourage us to have a conversation about how we can reframe our revenues for the state. So we appreciate, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm David Ellsburn with Voices for Problem Gambling Recovery. And I just wanted to say that, you know, over the last year, the lottery has been, they've had responsible gambling campaigns, which I don't want to say is not a very good thing to do and worthy, but that only covers just a small portion of the problem, because what they really need to be concerned is about the problem or pathological gambler, and that's why I support this Bill 4028. We know, as other people mentioned, there's a strong correlation between ads or lack of ads and enrollment in problem gambling programs. And I would venture a guess that there's a very weak correlation between responsible gambling ads and the effect on problem gamblers. So we do need those ads that are directed towards the problem and the pathological gambler. There's probably about 75,000 people in Oregon who are problem or pathological gamblers, which is a pretty big number. And as it is, there's only a small fraction of those who are actually get into the treatment programs. And so we really need that advertising. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Senator, committee, thank you. I'm here today as president of Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery. Our mission is
Please
to...
Please state your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wes Wood. Sorry. Our mission is work around... We advocate, we educate, and we promote healthy recovery. We provide statewide speakers bureau. We do outreach work with care providers. We do peer mentor certification and placement. We work with government and with the Oregon Lottery. It's imperative, especially now, that action be taken to minimize the damage to our citizens, to our economy, and their families. This bill is a part of that work. It is key for the public to know their options and to know availability of treatment and care. Declining numbers in treatment do not represent a lesser problem, quite the opposite. And I urge you through this bill to be a part of the better future for Oregonians. And I'll close around that by saying a piece of the work we do is in that statewide outreach. We speak not only to providers, but clinicians and community workers. And what we have found in this last year with the absence of the advertising piece, there's a perception in the community that the treatment has gone away. Mm. And that is a huge piece. Mm. So that's the part we're going to clean up with this, mm. you know.
Thank you. It's Voices for Recovery?
Yes.
Where do you get your funding?
Our funding, we are a pilot project originally of the Oregon Council on Problem Gambling 6 years ago. And their goal was to do exactly the work that we do. I'm a recovering gambler. David, if I may disclose, is a significant other of a problem gambler. He's also on our board. We're a 501c3. And when I say significant, if I may indulge for a moment, that's in caps. Mm. You know, so we do a lot of the hard work, feet on the ground. We meet the people, and we're heavily involved in what's going on out there. And so we have the luxury of being the liaison body. And to answer your question, we currently are funded through grant and contract services with Problem Gambling Services, State of Oregon.
So that money actually comes from our general fund to, you must have fundraisers too, the lottery?
Well, we are a piece of the 1% that funds. But
okay.
We
that's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, we are a nonprofit.
Thank you very much. Uh-huh.
Thank you. All any other questions?
They are the 1%.
1%. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for coming. And I'd like to call Jack back up to talk about the fiscal. We don't have it yet, so we can't move the bill. But we will carry this over till Monday. And then, Bill, I'd like your take on it from a Lodging and Restaurant Association perspective.
Madam Chair, again, for the record, Jack Roberts, the director of the Oregon Lottery. We have, I think, just this afternoon filed the revised fiscal because of the combination of the two. But basically what both the original 4028 and 4048 showed is that there was no significant additional cost because these are all things that we have budgeted for and planning to do anyway. On the on 4028, we had the money and still have the money to run these ads and do this. All we were dealing with was a prohibition based on interpretation of the Attorney General's opinion against spending that money. This simply frees us up to do what we already budgeted and planned to do. And on as far as the other things that are in the dash two amendments, those are all things that we've committed to do going forward. The only thing that's new is the annual report, which, again, we'd be glad to do in any event and would not be a fiscal impact on us.
Great. Thank you very much. Mr. Perry.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. And like the speakers before me, the House Bill 4028, I think, is something that is crucial and needs to be reinstated. On the amendment, which is a House Bill 4040, I guess I apologize. I've made it around all of the members like I like to do beforehand because it has a hearing in business transportation next Tuesday, I believe. And so, obviously, I think the intent of what they're trying to accomplish is something that I think we all agree on. We have had issues in the past where there have been court cases that have been filed but settled, so there's no precedence, except for they have paid out damages. But in South Carolina, they went against some retailers of the lottery. In Quebec, they did against the lottery. And so we've seen some court cases where there's been some liability once you start to spell out specifics that are supposed to be met. To the extent of that liability, you know, I do think it's still a question because, like I said, all those cases were settled, but it does open up the door to liability. And so, obviously, we, since one in South Carolina was against retailers and one was against the country of Quebec or province, I guess, obviously, I think there's some issues. And I guess, too, I would like to if I can have a short little soapbox, I think somebody needs to defend the employees of the lottery because they do a good job. I think if you go over and meet with any of them, they care deeply about all aspects of this. And if you look at the time where the lottery revenue has grown, it's usually been pressure from this building, not the people that are working at the lottery when they have needed more money. They usually don't meet projections, which means I would say they're underperforming, and I would say over the last 3 to 4 years, they have not even kept pace with GDP or anything else. So, you know, I just want to make sure that I think the people at the lottery do care about all the different facets of gambling. I think they care deeply. And so I'm not necessarily sure that the placement of the blame for trying to generate more money belongs on them. I think it belongs on all of us involved. So for those reasons, obviously, I think 40-28 should move forward. I just think a deeper look needs to be taken at 40-40.
Or the dash two amendments.
Yes. Yeah, dash two.
Can you address the liability issue? I think you already did, but...
Yeah, in many respects, our legal system is a bigger crapshoot than anything we do at the lottery. We don't know what liability the court's going to find at some point in the future, and that's whether we pass this bill or not. So I think the concerns that Mr. Perry expressed are legitimate ones, and I'd mentioned before that if it were possible either to have an amendment that expressly stated that there was no intent to create a private cause of action for any failure, or simply very strong legislative history of people saying we're trying to do this to encourage responsible gambling and to help fund the gambling addiction services, but we're not by any means guaranteeing people that we're going to bring this to an end, and that no one should assume that because they have a problem with gambling or become addicted to gambling that results in a liability by on the part of the state or by the retailers or anyone else.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Any other questions for the... Well, that's all we have for this. We need to probably... I would like to talk to the members of the committee, and caucuses probably want to deal with this, and so I want to move House Bill 4028 to Monday.
Work session?
Work session, yes. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4028. And I would like to open a work session on House Bill 4074. Sandy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4074, you'll recall, authorizes the Board of Medical Imaging to waive certain requirements for individuals who have substantial experiences as determined by the board and who is a medical imaging employee of a rural hospital. It specifies that any healthcare practitioner may order or interpret medical imaging procedures if such procedures are within that practitioner's scope of authority. On the 17th, there were some issues raised around the scope authority of the practitioner's scope authority language. What you have before you, I believe, and was what it was discussed on the 17th were the A6s,
right,
which provides additional clarification on that scope language, and it is more precise as far as referencing the healthcare practitioner licensed, who is licensed to practice, as well as, that's inserted in two different places. I'm sorry. We do have a fiscal and a revenue on the A6s, minimal impact and no revenue.
And I just want to put on the record, is the Board of Nursing here, Board of Medical Imaging? No. Okay.
Nursing or medical imaging?
Both. I know that I heard from the Board of Nursing that they have no problems with the dash sixes. I would like to have you from the Board of Medical Imaging to put on the record that you have no issues.
He thumbs up.
Okay, so he has no issues with the dash sixes either.
Madam Chair, I move the dash A6 amendment to House Bill 4074.
A. Yes, Senator Cruz moves the dash sixes into A6. The dash A6 amendment into House Bill 4074 A. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call. Any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4074A as amended by the dash A6 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 4074A with the dash A6s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Tanner Hayward.
Aye.
Senator Knope.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries, and who would like to be the carrier? Knope?
Okay. Can you do it?
Senator Knope?
Can do it.
No?
Yeah.
Senator Shields?
No, Knope will do it.
Oh, you will. But
I don't want this one.
You don't want this
one?
I'll okay. take it if
okay,
else
Senator
wants.
Cruz
I don't care.
Will.
I don't care.
Senator Cruz will. All right. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 4074A, and I will open a work session on House Bill 4050A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4050 had a public hearing on the 18th. Specifies that insurers may not issue or deliver a policy against the risk of economic loss assumed under less than fully insured employee health benefit plan to employer groups with fewer than 51 employees. At the time, Madam Chair, members of the committee, on the 18th, you adopted the A3 amendments, which deleted the prohibition language that is contained in the Angros version of the bill. We now have the paperwork on the A3s, minimal expenditure, no revenue impact.
Madam Chair.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Let's just do it. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4050A, as amended by the dash A3 amendments, to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 4050A, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I do want to put on the record that there have been some concerns, although no one has really come forward publicly to put them on the record, that they're very concerned that the removing the prohibition may result in won't improve the small market, insurance market. And so I know that there are concerns. We feel that there's such at least many of us feel that is such a small part of the market that we're willing to go ahead. I was concerned that some of these companies they cherry pick and only companies that have a very minimal chance of having people who are really sick in their as employees will all start self-insuring themselves. And we don't know. In the future, we can always come back if that really is the case. Yeah. But is there any other comments on that?
Madam
yeah.
Chair.
Yes, Senator.
No, a business is going to make a business decision based on their bottom line. And like I said, when we heard this before, my business is not going to go here. We just couldn't capitalize to that level. And this is allowing a business to do something that fits their bottom line and their employees. So I think this is a good move, and I want to thank Senator Steiner Hayward for her work on this. I think this is a very good move.
Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be voting yes on this today because of the assertion made by the insurance brokers that the way this generally works is that in designing plans, they would start with what the insured market provides and then add to it. That's some of the discussion that we have heard. And I think that if we start to hear stories that self-insureds are not providing coverage in addition to what the insured market would provide, for example, coverage for autism, ABA services, other mandates that we might have in law. If we find that that's not the case, I would encourage us to revisit this and take another look at it down the road if that's actually turning out not to be the case, and a lot of places are using this to provide fewer benefits than would happen in the insured market. So I just wanted to put that on the record, and hopefully as those plan designs are going forward with the association, that message will be conveyed.
Great. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the concerns that have been raised, and I've been doing a certain amount of due diligence myself since I've heard about these concerns.
We have, as Ms. Kelly pointed out the other day when we first heard this bill and moved the amendments, somewhat limited ability to assess the self-insured market because they fall into the ERISA laws and therefore are not subject to state insurance division requirements and are not tracked as such. However, we also heard testimony from witnesses who have experience in this market that it currently represents approximately 1 to 2% of the small business market, which is a pretty tiny fraction. To my mind, although I move this amendment in because I firmly believe that this is a business decision and should be left to them rather than to the government to make that choice, I think it highly unlikely that these very small businesses will take advantage of it for exactly the reasons that Senator Cruz pointed out, the lack of capitalization and the hassles, frankly, of administering a plan like this would be really prohibitive and unwise for most smaller businesses. The last concern I would point out that has been raised is the issue about which businesses choose to self-insure. I had the privilege of meeting with folks from one of these businesses in my district. It's a pediatric medical group. Most of the physicians are over 40. Their spouses are over 40. They have teenage kids who are athletic and getting themselves into all sorts of challenges. But some of the doctors are older and facing health challenges. So I don't think it's just the young healthies that are trying to do this. And the reality is that any business that's thinking about doing this should be aware that even young, healthy people have bad things happen medically. Yes, really. And we know that's true, unfortunately. We wish it weren't, but bad stuff happens to young, healthy people. So I appreciate the concerns. I completely agree that we need to be vigilant about this. I will be perfectly happy to revisit this if it turns out we're wrong, but I'm pretty darn confident that we're right in making this change, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
I see Commissioner Colley, the insurance commissioner, here. You don't have to come up, but I did.
No, I'd like her to come up.
Okay.
In the wrong room at the wrong time.
She's expecting to put some things on the record.
The chair did ask me to be present, so.
I was just hoping, going back to my earlier comments, that the reason I'm voting yes is because it's been relayed to me that people will be providing in the self-insured market benefits in addition to what the insured plans would be doing. I was hoping that in your complaint process, you might be able to flag the number of complaints that might come from people in the self-insured market who would be taking advantage of this change. My guess is it's probably going to be a small amount, but if there's a way that you can say, okay, we got this number of ERISA complaints, and they were from employers in the 50 to 100 mm-hmm. market, that would be helpful so that we could really assess if this is actually playing out the way we intend it to.
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, so and when I was here, I guess, 2 days ago, I did talk a little bit about our complaint process, and even though we may not be able to get the same results for someone who's on a self-insured plan as on a commercially insured plan, we do take those complaints. I can ask my staff to be sure to be on the lookout and kind of flag that, so we'll see how many of those types of complaints we receive, but unlike insured plans, we're not going to get kind of any sort of prospective filing about what those benefit plans will look like. So, but happy to keep an eye on that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
And just to be clear, the historical nature of this has been that companies above 50 employees have been able to purchase these stop-loss policies and therefore have been able to change. This only came up as a bill, so it's the only group that's being added is for groups under 50 under 51 employees. Am I correct in that, Ms. Kelly?
Madam Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, and I realize I forgot to identify myself, but Laura Kelly, for the record, I'm the insurance commissioner. So to answer your question, yes, the A3 amendments would be changing from the current status where an employer who has 50 or more employees can purchase stop loss. So the -3s would then open that up. There is probably an important nuance to point out. So when we get out to 2016, when that definition changes and also when the employer mandate kicks in for the 50 to 100 size employers, the employers who have between 50 and 100 employees do have to demonstrate that they're providing a minimum essential coverage in order to show that they're meeting that mandate. So that's kind of the threshold that they'll have to meet to demonstrate they're providing coverage. Employers who have fewer than 50 employees are not subject to that requirement.
Understood. Thank you.
Madam Chair, that's assuming that timeline doesn't get kicked out again. So
that is as it stands today.
Okay. All right. Clerk will call. Seeing no further discussion, clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hayward.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Senator Knope.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chairman Monahan.
Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Steiner Hayward will be carrying this bill.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 4050A and open a work session on House Bill 4013.
Where do you want to start?
Okay, I'd like to start with the underlying bill has no issues. What has issues is the dash... two amendments, and I think that Senator Steiner Hayward had addressed the issue of CCOs being listed in the insurance code, and they should be listed in the section that deals with CCOs. So take it away and go into describing the amendment. And this is the step therapy
amendment.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a quick background, a reminder, earlier in the session we considered a bill that would have removed a lot of the step therapy requirements. And step therapy are the evidence-based protocols that say let's start with the most proven, least expensive, effective drug for a problem and then move along if that one doesn't work. This committee agreed that the bill as it then stood didn't make sense except for one part of it, which did require improved disclosure of policies and protocols for step therapy, the rationale for them, and how doctors or other providers could work with their patients to move them along that step therapy should that be necessary. As a result, when House Bill 4013, which the underlying bill deals with e-prescribing of controlled substances, came up, we considered the possibility of adding an amendment to deal simply with that disclosure piece to improve disclosure. Let me say very clearly, the vast majority of insurance plans do a really good job of making clear what their policies are and working with providers to help them so that patients who have individual circumstances that warrant moving along the step therapy protocols faster are able to do so. Unfortunately, as in many cases, just as in the colonoscopy bill that I carried on the floor this morning, a few bad actors are spoiling things for everybody else. So we thought it important to add statute that said to insurance plans and CCOs, because we think it very important that patients on the Oregon Health Plan be treated exactly the same as patients with commercial insurance or have the same opportunities, and that providers don't have to think, oh, well, I can't figure this out for a CCO patient, even though I can figure it out for a commercial patient, for those providers who see both populations. So we worked to draft an amendment that would require plans that prescribed prescription coverage to make their policies clear and make them easily accessible, and also make it clear what documentation is required to move patients along the protocol. The dash ones had a problem that was quite rightly identified by the CCOs as including CCOs under what was termed health care coverage plans, which they're not. And we appreciate having that brought to our attention. We amended it this morning to take them out of that section and put them in a new section altogether, which is now Section 5, would be Section 5 of the amended bill, should we include this amendment, and basically apply exactly the same provisions to the CCOs as are required of traditional health care coverage plans in terms of disclosure. Since that time, an additional concern has been raised, and I would refer you to page 2 of the Dash 2 amendments, starting on line 21, section 4, sub 2, C. The main section, this is, section 2 is what says, sub 2 is what says what they have to do. They have to, ACE is the clinical criteria for each step therapy protocol, the procedure by which a practitioner may submit to the plan, the rationale for doing this, and C, and this is where it gets complicated, the specific documentation, if any, that a practitioner must submit to the plan for the plan to determine the appropriateness of step therapy for the practitioner's patients. While the commercial plans are comfortable with the language as it now stands, and the advocates for including this language in general are comfortable with the language as it now stands, there remain some concerns from the CCOs. And these seem to fall under two categories. The first of which is a concern, a theoretical concern about liability, whereby if the provider thought that the documentation requirements weren't specific or clear enough that that would be a cause of action. Ms. Freeman met with the several members of the CCOs, several representatives from the commercial insurance plans. I don't remember your last name. I apologize, Anne. Murray. Ms. Murray, representing Bristol-Myers Squibb, this afternoon, and said that pointed out that this bill would not create a private cause of action, and therefore that would be unlikely to be an issue, and that the commercial insurance plans pointed out that they had not been subjected to these kinds of claims. Again, we would be bringing in Ms. Calley were a patient or provider to decide that this wasn't specific enough. The other, I had the opportunity then, thank you, Ms. Engler, to speak with Jim Slayer, the pharmacy director at Care Oregon, who brought up a valid point about this clause, which is that when you say specific documentation, there may be different requirements for different patients, depending on the reason for advancing them. And I appreciate that concern. I still think that it's important to say something about documentation, but I asked Mr. Slater to think hard and quickly about language that might be useful. And he said he would, and he'd get back to me quickly. I'm also hoping to speak to somebody from Family Care. Mr. Ballack is working on arranging that so that I can have a clear understanding of their concerns. It occurs to me that one could say something like, guidelines for appropriate clinical documentation or something like that that would be less specific and more flexible and would still cover the concerns that the plans quite rightly have about making sure that step therapy protocols are followed, but also would have some flexibility for individual patient circumstances that would make it easier for the plans to work with providers and patients. I explained to Mr. Slater the concern of providers who speak with one person at a plan, and I'm using the term plan generically, forgive me, CCOs, but I just can't keep saying everybody at once, would speak with one person at a plan, be told that certain pieces of documentation be submitted, submit those, and then be told, oh, no, that wasn't what you needed at all. You need to do something else. And he appreciated that concern. So we're trying to figure out language, Madam Chair, that would address those concerns but still address the concerns of transparency and consistency. Not, I would point out, consistency that each plan has to have exactly the same protocols, but that every plan has the same, has consistent policy for a given protocol on a given condition or drug set down the road. I think that I hope, and there are several people in this room who were in my office earlier today, if I have omitted something from my summary, would somebody please wave his or her hand?
I think it's important to reiterate that documentation refers to the procedures or policies that the CCOs write. Is that correct?
No, Madam Chair.
No.
The documentation, Clause C says, the specific documentation, if any, that a practitioner must submit to the plan for the plan to determine the appropriateness of step therapy for the practitioner's patient. So that's what lines 21 through 23 say, and that's where the concern arises.
What if you just remove the word specific?
That would probably address the concern. I'd have to talk to Mr. Slater again, and I don't know, Mr. Ballack, whether that would...
Madam Chair, and Senator Steiner Hayward, I think that might satisfy. So it might be as simple as doing
it,
that.
It may well be, and I would need to talk. But we've all agreed that because there was still some uncertainty about this and because we don't have a fiscal on this, that we would use this opportunity to
brainstorm out loud a little bit, as Senator Cruz quite helpfully has just done, and make sure that we got the concerns on the record so that we were addressing them openly and everybody was concerned. Have I omitted talking about any concerns? Because we're
Yes. The underlining bill is very important to some people.
Right. I completely agree. And I want to say publicly, I really commend the commercial insurance plans for working very carefully and thoughtfully to craft the underlying bill, because I understand that this was a contentious subject last session. I worked with many of you in the interim. Several of us worked with many of you in the interim to try to come up with a plan. So believe me, I don't want to jeopardize the underlying bill, but if we can reach a solution to this particular problem that's acceptable to all the parties, that would be a good thing. If not, we'll bail on it.
I'd like to call up Josh, representing Family Care, Rose, for Care Oregon, and Ashland for Health Share.
Just the CCOs?
These are just the CCOs, because they're the ones who have the opposition.
Is Greenlick okay with all this?
If we get to a point where my understanding is that if everybody here agrees, he'll be fine with it.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm just going to go ahead. And colleagues. Rose Engler, representing Care Oregon. We do the pharmacy benefit management for some of the HealthShare risk-accepting entity population that we have for Columbia Pacific CCO, for Jackson County CCO, for Yamhill CCO, as well as Oregon's Health Co-op, which is a commercial plan. Senator Steinbrenner Hayward, you did a fantastic job of reiterating our concerns. It is that one very specific piece. I'm really pleased to say that we probably should have had our the experts, our physician on the committee, and our pharmacy director talking about this earlier. I'm really glad you guys have gotten in touch. I think you did a beautiful job of saying where our concerns were. I jotted down some of the questions and comments, and I know you'll be in touch with Mr. Slater, who's our pharmacy director, and hopefully get something worked out. So I really appreciate working with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Josh Ballack, representing the Coalition for Healthy Oregon. COHO is an organization that works with 8 of the 16 CCOs, including Family Care, WVP Health Authority, Trillium Health Plans, Architrave down in Douglas County, and Mid-Rogue IPA. We are actually still in opposition of the amendment. We have 4 major concerns. We are concerned that this could undermine step therapy. Not all reasons for providers to bypass are necessarily equal, and legislating all of that type of stuff is actually very complicated, and in a short session it's pretty tough to do. We provide this information to our providers. They just have to ask. This stuff is not a secret. They go out of their way to make sure that they are there to help them whenever that is, so we don't really understand why this would need to be put into law. And we are concerned that some interests could use this new statute to file possible lawsuits or complaints that could lead to efforts to undermine step therapy. We believe the intent of the legislative proponents are pure, but this amendment may lead to some costly unintended consequences for our burdening CCOs. We would ask that you don't adopt the dash twos as they were written right now.
May I ask a question, Madam Chair? Mr. Ballack, actually 2 questions. Mr. Ballack, is there anything that we could do to the dash twos that would make you guys amenable to including them, or are you opposed to including the dash twos no matter what? Anything that has to do with step therapy. That's not meant to be a hostile question. It's a simple matter-of-fact question.
Madam Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, no, we are absolutely open to trying to figure out a way to make this work. I think the one thing that I've picked up kind of listening to this more than anything is that this is an incredibly complicated issue, and a lot of this stuff is really tough to try to legislate, and I get worried that we may end up getting into such semantics in order to give people flexibility, which is the cornerstone of what our CCO efforts are. The great part about this is it's a lot of different little CCOs out there kind of doing individual things, and coming in from a statewide perspective in such a short session, it may not be time, but we are always more than willing and able, and welcome the opportunity to continue working with you. And I, again, will be getting you in touch with probably not somebody from Family Care, but from All Care down in Southern Oregon. So I'm trying to line that up as we speak.
Thank you. Madam Chair. Thank you. And Mr. Balick, I completely agree with your concern about legislating step therapy. I'm not inclined to do that at all, either as a legislator or as a physician. I don't like the legislature messing with my practice. So going to that side.
We're going to, though.
Yeah, no, you're not. That being said, I don't see anything in the bill as it's currently written that says what the policies need to be or how they need to be determined or what the criteria for the step therapy protocols should be or that they even need to be identical from between each of the CCOs that COHO's part of. And I'm a little puzzled how you're getting – I'm, again, not trying to be confrontational. I just don't understand what you're saying to me.
Madam Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, the one thing that when I've talked to my few pharmacy directors is that essentially no reason for step therapy is exactly the same, and getting all of that documentation and those types of, and trying to, because one of the things that's in the law is it says that it's got to be easy and clear. Well, in some cases it's not easy and not clear, or there are a multitude of different reasons. And I think one of the things that our providers have really, our CCOs have tried to work with the providers to do that in every single case, but the problem is that what about these special one-off situations where maybe this doesn't quite fit into what this is here? Could this possibly lead to where we may not be in compliance with this new law?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. So I don't see the easy and clear part that you just mentioned. I'm not trying to be difficult, Mr. Balick, but if you're seeing things in here that I'm missing, I need to know about this.
Madam Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Are you talking about easily accessible?
Well, easily accessible, exactly, and exactly what that means. I also
clear explanations.
And clear explanations, and we worry about there being what exactly that means, and there could be some ambiguity inside of that.
I gotta say, Mr. Balick, I would be concerned if your plans didn't have clear criteria for why each step therapy protocol was developed. I would hope that those would be evidence-based. And frankly, if I had to guess, if I looked at the step therapy protocols for a given condition across commercial plans and CCOs in this state, they'd probably be pretty close to identical, and the rationale and the evidence behind them would probably be pretty close to identical. So I'm puzzled, to say the least, by that.
Well, in defense of the CCOs, I mean, we have taken you to task in a sense, I mean, to cover Medicaid lives, and there are so many things that you are implementing, et cetera, and this is just one more thing that you don't really know the ramifications for. I'm moving this bill over to Monday and have more conversation. But it is really important for you to try to be over the weekend. come with us. Come to the some kind of consensus.
Understood, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Ashlyn.
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ashlyn Strong, and I'm representing HealthShare of Oregon, the state's largest CCO, covering about 185,000 lives in the Portland metro area. I just wanted to say on the record that the -2 amendments took care of HealthShare's concerns. Transparency is a core value of HealthShare's, and we are comfortable with this language moving forward.
Thank you very much. All right. Well, with that, I want to make sure that we're carrying this over to Monday. Work session, yes, Monday. And I'll be talking with the members of the committee and seeing. Monday, if we can move both, there are two bills that we're going to have.
Just the two we're going
to. Yeah, I plan to hopefully just meet on Monday, and then Tuesday we will not meet. But it really depends on these last two bills if we need to carry them over regarding whatever reason. But the underlying bill, Nikki, is not going to die.
It's not. I promise.
Okay.
Madam Chair, can I ask you one other thing?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I would add one thing that I omitted from my conversation. I did commit to everybody in the room in my office earlier
that if we implemented this amendment and if it turned out to be anywhere close to the kinds of problems that the people who are held concerns are, that I would work very hard in the 15th session to fix them. So I appreciate the fact that there's uncertainty. I appreciate the fact that sometimes things are open to interpretation or concerns, but, and I'm not trying to leave anybody out on a limb. I'm not saying this is, you know, etched in stone forever, but that's where I'm at with that. So I will keep working with people in the next couple of days.
No other comments from the audience? Okay, with that, did I close the work session on House Bill 4013, and we are adjourned.